You're listening to Prometheus by Minute. I'm your host, Connor Coulson. This is Minute 88. This minute begins with Yannick torching Fifield and ends with Shaw meeting Wayland. And I am joined, perhaps for the last time, for Prometheus, is Philip from the Twofold Podcast and Matrix Minute Podcast.
Hey! Hooray, that's me. Welcome back, I say to myself. My form of words today.
I'm so glad I'm back.
Yes, thank you. I'm glad I've been welcomed back. My words today, not so good. So,
I guess we should just cancel this whole thing.
Oh, no. Well, if you thought I was bad last time, I'm probably going to be worse today. I don't know why. Sometimes you just can't. Your brain doesn't work. But I'll try my best.
Yeah, definitely know that feeling.
I'll try my best.
And then we cut to Shaw injecting herself yet again with more painkillers. And I'm pretty sure that at a certain point, that's not going to do anything but just make you OD. I mean, I'm not a doctor, but there's a limit, right?
Yeah.
I have looked into just painkillers in general because of, you know, being alive and human and shit. And yeah, it can, mm-hmm. you can actually have an adverse reaction to even ibuprofen and paracetamol. And like, even if the patient is taking it in the correct doses, we don't really understand pain. We can't actually measure it. And like anesthesia and playing with consciousness and pain and all of that, it's just sort of just stab in the dark, really seems to work, so we'll keep doing it.
I guess so. I have not looked into that very much, but do continue. I'm fascinated.
So we really don't know how anesthesia makes people unconscious, which is scary. Like, you're going in for surgery and they're just sort of, I mean, there is a certain science to it, but there is always a risk. And then with over-the-counter medications, there's still, well, it can be said for all medication that human beings are just so different that there can be these intolerances and allergic reactions that we just don't understand.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering if in the future, talk about these space painkillers, if they're like tailored to an individual or how that works, I'd really love to know.
Man, that would be an interesting thing. I mean, I'm sure that might come into practice where there is an option of being able to tailor certain medicinal things for individuals instead of...
So what they're finding now, and this is something that's really fascinated me with medicine and nutrition and all of that. So, you know, there's 23andMe and all those DNA history websites.
Everyone's like, lots of people are doing that, for sure. I haven't done it, so I don't know anything about myself.
Yeah, some people are like, but then they'll have all your data and they'll sell that data. And, I mean, they're always doing that. I mean, I have a VPN, but otherwise, they're probably still getting my data somehow. Yeah, so the 23andMe and all the genetic ancestry websites. So that technology is getting so good now, and they're realizing that they can use it for different things. And I wish I had the link. I mean, I'll put it in the footnotes, I guess, but it was Rhonda Patrick, the nutritional genius that she is. She's been on Joe Rogan a few times. So on her website, she says, if you've had those tests, you can actually send that over to this other website that can tell you what genetically you should and shouldn't be eating. So let's say you are of...
Ooh, that's cool.
Yeah, so if you are of Asian ancestry, of course, they'll say, well, you probably have lactose intolerance. And, you know, different people are going to have gluten sensitivity, or they're going to have... they're better at absorbing certain nutrients. And those individuals who are very good at absorbing and retaining nutrients are the people who survive on the vegan diet the longest, because they're just able to get by on so little. Whereas other people...
Yes, of course.
Like, they eat so much red meat, they take iron supplements, and yet you know, they're still always going to be a little bit, have to be a little bit cautious about those sorts of things. So, yeah.
Are you one of those or no?
No. So I have 3 autoimmune conditions. And so pretty much everything but meat and dairy will trigger intolerant symptoms. So anything from autism, inflammation, brain fog, convulsions, and then just single digestive issue you can imagine. But I'm wondering, and this is why I would love to do these DNA tests, because, okay, so epigenetics is where your genes change throughout your life. They used to think that your genes, once you're born, they stay the same, and that's not true at all. It can change just through anything, you know, environmental changes, dietary changes, after you get sick, after you give birth, so on and so forth. And so they don't really know a lot about autoimmune conditions, but in one case, one of those conditions, chronic fatigue, myalgic encephalomyelitis, was triggered by Balmer Forest virus, which does, like any virus, leave a trace in my DNA. So I'd love to do a blood test and see, well, I don't think it's a blood test. I think it's like a saliva test. And then, yeah, just see, well, what markers show up.
Yeah, that would be very fascinating for sure. Interesting.
I should just basically do like a health and nutritional science podcast.
Yeah, do it. Find a movie that is like, that has a lot of that, and then just keep segueing the comments
for
them. Just,
or yeah. Something. So, yeah, I do feel like what's going on here, like this is my headcanon, my fan theory, is that every crew member has already had this DNA test. And so when she gets whatever anesthetics or painkillers, that those are actually made specifically for her.
Yeah, that's cool, man. That's a nice bit of futurism to add into this, and that's great. I wish that happened.
Fascinating story about medicine that needs to be custom made, at least for gender, is sleeping medication. There was, I can't remember which, the particular one.
I think I heard that,
yeah,
actually.
That men were fine, but women would take longer to feel the effects of it, and it would wear off a lot later. So what was happening is they'd take it before bed, and they'd lie there tossing and turning for 2, 3, 4 hours. And in the morning when they have to go to work, they're barely conscious, and they're trying to drive to work, and it's, yeah, quite dangerous.
Yikes.
Yeah. So I think, I can't remember what the solution was. I think they maybe have changed the medication, but
I think they should.
I think the most efficient solution was just like, yeah, so women take this 3 hours before bed, men take it directly before bed.
Oh, great. That's a big difference there.
Yeah. I could go on about all these sorts of things, but I gotta stay focused on Prometheus.
All right.
So, yes, Shaw is walking down this corridor, and the whole time she'd been looking over her shoulder, and I've been wondering, is she worried about the trilobite, or is she worried about some other crew member? Because at this point, she has no idea what's going on, how they're going to treat her. Last thing she knows, David wants to put her in cryo, and then you've got, you know, Ford and an unnamed crewman trying to drag her into cryo. She runs away. She's just gone through this horrendous ordeal. Then everyone seems to have disappeared. I guess it's been a big day.
Right, yeah. But let's talk about this door. It's a wonderful looking door.
It is a good door.
It is a nice door. It's a nice circular. I'm sure you talked about the circular, because I don't think they didn't have that in Alien. In Alien, it was those kind of rectangular.
Yeah, and in Alien Isolation, are those still... Those are rectangular, I guess. I forgot. It's been a while since I played. So the set design, well, I mean, that goes back to Ron Cobb, his designs for the original Alien.
Ah, Ron Cobb, so good, yeah, really nice.
Friggin' legend. I was listening to a podcast today, the best movies never made, and the first episode, then they just started. I don't mind giving a shout out to another podcast, actually, it's pretty good so far, I'm enjoying it. So, best movies never made is a bunch of script writers and people who have worked in the industry, and they find these initial scripts for movies that never ended up being produced. And one of them was E.T. Well, there was the original thing called Night Sky or something like that. that became E.T., and then they talk about E.T. Part 2. But Ron Cobb was actually involved in the initial concept art for E.T. before it became a family film and it was more of a horror movie. It's definitely more monstrous and alien and scary. And apparently he wasn't happy about them changing into a family film. So. But to me,
But he already has his alien movie. Yes. He got to work on that one. That one's like the king. It still is.
And I think it's fantastic that they got two very... I mean, everyone talks about how they got two very different visionary styles to give us the engineers, the space jockeys, and the xenomorph. And then you got...
The space jockeys.
And then you've got Ron Cobb working on the human ships and architecture, I guess you could say. And... Oh, I think more movies should do that. Because if you really want to capture all these different alien worlds, we'll make it come out of someone else's brain. Because I know as a designer, personally, there's only so many things I can do or I will think to do or that I have the instincts to do. And so to get that diversity, just get more people. It's so obvious.
I know, yeah. I don't know, I feel like maybe there's a... I think it's because most of the people that you draw from the pool of concept artists kind of all kind of know each other and they're kind of working on similar things. So
especially these days, I feel, you know, you look on.
Yeah, that's what I'm just talking about that in context of now, because like it's all very, you know, it's all digital, which is OK. It's actually I love digital. I don't draw analog very much, but
I cannot do digital. It sucks.
You just get used to it.
But I color digitally.
Oh, okay.
I know. I think it's just a matter of just keeping at it. But it's like, no, I want to unplug. I want to just sit here in front of some paper and draw.
Okay, well, that's... So
I guess
that's
I don't...
That's a very valid thing.
Yeah. So I guess I don't have the incentive there. But the thing is, in fashion illustration, even and costume design, to this day, a lot of it is still traditionally illustrated.
Mm.
And it's only really when you look at these sort of your Star Wars, your Alien movies, your, yes, friggin' Marvel.
Avengers.
Yeah, all those movies are very uniform in how they do concept art. And I think that's kind of a shame.
Yeah, it's boring.
Because between... You know, things as diverse as Guardians of the Galaxy, Thor, Captain America, you look through, and I've got friends who bought those concept art books, and I'm like, if you strung these all together and I just flip through it, I would not know where one begins and the other ends.
100% agree. 100% agree, because, like, that is one of the things that I had, like, a friend of mine bought me the art book for the Avengers 1 back in 2012. And
what a golden time.
I was really looking at the other books. I was never really into getting more of them because for me, it just feels like I already know the style. This is how it looks like. Looking at the other stuff is cool, but it's not like it doesn't give you as much inspiration because you already know that they're kind of the same. You know, there isn't, it's not like, you know, concept art back in the day before digital, it used to be very dependent on the style of the individual more than, because like now you just do photo bashing and stuff like that, which is wonderful and I love it, but I mean
That's the thing, is when I was taught fashion illustration, the only thing they were really particular about is that obviously the costumes, well the outfits have to be fairly detailed, although some artists are not detailed at all. It's very gestural. It's just sort of, oh, it should be flowy like this, or it should emphasize the shoulders like this. But most teachers tend to want you to be fairly detailed, and that the figures have to be 9 heads tall. So they have to be very elongated, and that's how you...
9 heads, wow.
Yes, and that's how you make the... And I have to break myself out of that habit, because I was trained that way for years and years. And so now I'm just doing a bit more conventional. I mean, anime is actually... A lot of those characters, like Spike Spiegel, oh my god.
Oh yeah,
but,
no.
Yeah, when I'm doing like comic art or just normal art, I'm like, nope, human proportions, not runway model proportions. Yeah.
For sure.
But, yeah, going back to Giga and Ron Cobb, you couldn't get two more different artists, because Ron Cobb, it's very geometric. It's Copic markers. It's very much that kind of almost, how would you say, a comic book? Kind of. It's not quite, yeah, I don't know. I mean, Mobius, maybe. The two of them probably have a bit more overlap. Giga's airbrush, he sort of improvises, and so there is a totally different aesthetic. And, I could just gush about it all day. That's just, I don't know if that was really Scott who figured that out or what, but yeah, that was a stroke of genius. And looking at the Prometheus concept art book, that's very samey as well. And when they interviewed the concept artist, I said, yeah, we were basically told, do it like, oh, I never remember his name, the Russian artist that inspired them to do the engineers in a certain way. Gutelin, maybe. And they said, do it like that. And everyone sort of had to follow a certain style, and that's a real shame. I didn't expect to talk about this today, but that is, yeah, something that we are sadly losing more and more. Concept art is basically becoming animation, actual final production animation, because I think even there, concept art can be wild and wacky and big, but actually making the final animation is just, well, no, you make it look like how everyone else is making it look.
Mm-hmm. That's a big problem with concept art today. And I think that maybe one of the reasons could very well be the ease of being able to combine images and drawings from or photos from other places and putting them together digitally, and then people, and then there's a demand for it being a certain look that everyone else is doing, because that's a thing. And then experimentation, I know there's a lot of experimentation that still goes on with concept art, but it's not as diverse as you would expect it to be, as you would kind of want it to be, to generate some new look, because it seems like everybody's kind of afraid of doing that in the first place, because I don't know. And speaking of which, I don't want to interrupt, I'm sorry, but you have a Facebook account, and then you have, and if you're an artist, like I apparently am, there are, you kind of want to see other people's artwork, so there's like different groups that you can join, you know. Some of them are people who are actually doing concept art in the industry or out of the industry. Anyway, they're learned in that craft. And one thing I was going to actually mention, and I don't know if we're going to derail this podcast again, but it's just that what really gets me annoyed is people who are concept artists and who are saying, like, for example, the Batman, you know, the Batman, the new, did you see the screen test? Alleged screen test.
I'm so glad that we're getting a Daredevil season 4. I'm so excited.
Good. Okay. We're on the same kind of. Yeah. Yeah. Someone was so inspired by that screen test, right, that they decided to do concept art. Very nice concept art. I can actually send it to you if you'd like. Which I'm just like, this looks just, the person who did it, the craft, well done. Like the way that he painted it, great, but the direction is like, this is just Dark Knight again. I don't understand what can inspire you to do something like this, and we're just talking about how things are the same, and this is like samey, and I'm like, no! This looks so great, but it's just like the idea is so boring. You want me to just show you?
Yes. So, I'm looking at the Batman.
This is a fan made this, but he's definitely a professional.
Yeah. It's like a concept art style. It's basically just Arkham Knight and Dark Knight.
Yeah, yeah. I love the armor idea, but that was done already. So I feel like if you're going to do something new, I don't understand what can bring you. I don't know how long it took this person to make it. Looks great, by the way. I'm always saying that. It
would have taken ages.
But like the direction is just, it's, we've seen this. Like, show me something new. I thought you wanted to be inspired by it. Plus, I don't understand when people get enthusiastic about an upcoming movie. For me, as an artist, I have no interest or excitement to do something that's already being done.
Mm.
You know what I mean? So I always find it interesting that there's people who are excited about the upcoming movie, and then they're like, I'm going to do concept art of how I think it's going to look like. And it's like, why would you do that if it's not going to be yours? You know, they're already making it.
But it already exists. Yeah, it's a very good point.
Yeah, it already exists. So I never understood something like that. And for me, there's just...
I also think this costume, there's like this weird armor stuff on the inner thigh, and it causes a very strange imbalance with the line of the leg.
Oh,
and this is fun.
I didn't notice.
Funny enough, I was just thinking about this on the bus today. I was just imagining fashion design and stuff. And my thing right now is trousers. I really want to know, where can we go with them? Why don't people do enough with them?
And that's interesting.
If you look at my Pinterest, my fashion board is just
so
many different trouser designs. Because I just go, everyone wants to do a cool jacket. Yes, jackets are cool. And yes, everyone wants to design the most sickest jacket in the world. But we've done that.
Yeah, and the most sickest Batman outfit as well.
Yes. But yeah, there's not a lot of variety with trousers. And I was thinking, well, the biggest problem is you want legs to be straight. You definitely want a very nice, clean silhouette. And when you start playing with those proportions, you start getting very like bigger hips, like with jodhpurs and stuff like that. So it's always going to be quite unnatural. So what I'm focusing on now is just very intricate paneling, kind of taking a leaf out of athletic wear, tech wear, even superhero costumes, that it's a lot of panels and details. And I think that's where you can make a statement.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying that these panels and details are focusing, are kind of leading you into the wrong...
Yeah, you're putting way too much weight on the inner part of his leg, so he looks a little bit knock-kneed.
Yeah. I was going to say that, yeah. That's interesting. I would have never noticed that. The only thing I notice is just in general, just Dark Knight. It's just, we've seen it before. Please try again.
This is nothing new. Whereas, and this is why Michael Wilkinson is a bloody legend, bloody Australian legend, by the way.
Oh yeah, Michael Wilkinson?
So he's worked on Tron Legacy, Watchmen, a lot of Zack Snyder's movies, and his Batfleck design and the execution of that costume. Oh, I could write essays about it.
No, yeah. Oh. Honestly, I'm going to have to say the Batman from Dawn of Justice. I have reservations about the casting. I have reservations about the build, the way how big he is. But I do have to say that...
He's so scary.
Yeah. But what I do like about it is that they tried something that wasn't the armor again, you know?
Yeah.
And they did the gray and... They didn't make it look like Batman 60s as well.
Yes, so. And that's amazing that you somehow make it look armored, but it's not literal, you know, panels and plates. It is one continuous piece. It looks like it's fabric, but you get the sense there's stuff underneath. It's just, perfection. Love it. And just how far we've come from... You know, I was at Bob Ringwood doing the 89 Batman costume, and he's got like Nike sneakers, and he's got this just one piece latex rubber crap. Just, oh my god! And now,
I'm glad that you're saying that, because like people love the 89. I think all of the Batman costumes are great, in my opinion, until it gets to and I'm sorry about this, by the way, until it gets to Arkham, and then that's where it kind of gets redundant, in my opinion.
The Arkham games,
Because like after Dark Knight, I love the Dark Knight suit. I love that one.
Yeah, that was, that blew my tiny brain when that came out. So that was, I did like Batman Begins. I actually quite like the Batman Begins costume. I think that doesn't get enough love.
No, that one's great too. Yeah, I think it doesn't get enough love either.
But when we saw the Dark Knight one in 2009, was that 2008. Oh, same year as Iron Man then. Okay, so I was 16 and I was just getting into costumes and I was just like, oh, of course, oh my god, and the neck turns.
Yeah.
Oh my god, holy shit,
finally.
It's a velvet cape.
Yeah, right, that too. It was really cool that they did that in Batman Begins as well. They just made it very light, a very light cape. It's not like a leathery...
Yeah, which I've sort of taken a leaf out of their book with my Ozymandias costume. I mean, Ozymandias also has this, but I've always loved the fully lined velvet cape, because that just looks so professional. It has good weight, whereas so many people just get a sheet of fabric and just hem it.
Yeah.
Just, no. What are you doing?
No. I don't know much about these technicalities, but I know exactly what you're talking about.
It's the difference between, you know, actually looking like the character and looking like your mom made you the costume.
Yeah. That's right. So anyway, yeah. I just wanted to mention so after the plate armor of Batman Dark Knight, Arkham is, I mean, if there's going to be armor, it's going to be redundant after that. And that's what I always felt. And I feel like going back to this concept art, it looks fantastic. The rendering is fantastic. The skill to make this is great.
It reminds me a lot of quote unquote realistic interpretations of the Batman Beyond costume, where it's just, yep, that sure is a thing, right, but right. You're kind of missing Batman Beyond's a great example of, and this is, I mean, animation at its best should be this.
Yes.
Where it's very gestural, yes. It's very figurative, and so the sleekness and the minimalist style of Batman Beyond was never meant for three dimensions.
No, yeah, of course. This is what I keep talking about with Dragon Ball all the time. It's like there's a certain animation.
Yes.
That you can't do in live action. Every single time they try, it's not going to work because they're meant to be, for lack of a better term, a caricature.
Mm. Like Pokemon, I kind of like when people do realistic ones because it's just nice to see what.
Oh, I don't. I hate it.
Yeah. Well, okay. So it's a love hate thing.
Okay, go.
But the thing I like is what textures they decide to use. Like, is Slowpoke
true?
Like
okay.
A seal,
yeah, gotcha.
Or is it more like a dugong? Or is it if someone is able to do that level of texture realism, I like that. Yeah. But I just feel like...
Is Jigglypuff fur or is it balloon skin?
Mm.
You know?
Yeah, that's always fun. I like that. But generally, other than the Detective Pikachu movie does a good job. They find the right balance. But yeah, a lot of that art just sort of go, yeah, but you missed the point.
I've never, like, honestly, like, I didn't even watch Detective Pikachu, to be honest. Like,
Detective Pikachu, it's good. Oh my God, that Pikachu, so damn cute.
Yeah, but it's just because I never liked putting Pokemon in real life. It doesn't make any sense to me. It just doesn't work. For me, it doesn't work. Sorry. I every time there's some, like, you know, that the artist, I don't remember his name.
Oh, yeah, because he's like, he's the guy.
Yeah, once again, very skilled, very, very talented. He very clever, but honestly, like, I just hate seeing realistic depictions because it doesn't make any sense to me. Because they're meant to be cartoons.
Well, The Simpsons, no. Or Futurama.
Yeah, it's exactly the same. So for me, it's just, I don't even want to see it because there's nothing interesting, in my opinion, to when it's translated. But for you, of course, there's a difference. And
yeah.
That's great. That's fine. There's no reason. That's why Detective Pikachu exists. You can watch it.
Yes. So, yes, Shaw wanders into Wayland's room, and this is a weird scene. It is a very weird scene, because I don't know why everyone's behaving the way they do.
The first thing I was going to mention is that this just came up on to mind, and going into that sort of religious theming of this movie, it doesn't, like, doesn't it strike you as some kind of... When she gets in, there's this golden light. There's all these people in white. They're all, like, sitting down. They're crouching. And then, and it feels like some kind of ritual ceremony feel. Like, these are...
Yes, absolutely.
Holy men now. And then, I don't know. There's something like that.
Yeah, if you were to, like, paint this in, was it chiaroscuro?
Yeah.
In that sort of Rembrandt-y, you know, classical oil painting style. Oh, absolutely. That, yeah, it is, at least, it seems to be evoking that kind of sense. And I love that both prequels really play up on the religious and Renaissance imagery. First weird thing is that she does know that there are people in there. So in the script they do make it a bit more explicit that she is afraid of running into anyone, but yet she does go into a room with people in it, and... We can't. It's hard to hear without headphones on, but you do actually hear people on the other side of the door, so you can hear Waylon saying, "What is that?"
Really?
Yes. Which I never.
Before she opens the door.
Yeah, I never noticed.
Well, first of all, that makes me disappointed because that door looks thick, and I was hoping that these things would be sound isolated.
Yeah.
Considering all things considered, you know, the spaceship, high end, the sound carries through.
What is this nonsense?
As...
Flimsies.
Oh, I just noticed, because I was like, was the door open? No, I'm playing it back, though. And the, I guess, door puppeteers, if you will, They actually open the door a little too early. If you watch it, it goes a little ajar. Oh, yeah? And then she walks towards it, then she presses the button, and then they're like, oh, that's how cute.
Oh.
You tried, guys. And in post-production, you'd think they just make it stay still. Because that's not a difficult... I can do that in, like, Vegas. Sony Vegas, I should say.
Right.
She stumbles into the room, and she just collapses on her knees. And... I think that's a great shot. I do like that. It's very dramatic. And the weird thing is, so you got these two guys, you got a security guy and the doctor, who immediately run to pick her up, and then the doctor just walks away. Like, what are you doing? And then he pulls these gloves off. Because you'd think, you know, even if this guy's paid to just attend directly to Wayland, wouldn't he, you know, see if she's okay? But no, it's David who, when she first walks in, he turns to me and he has this look like, what the fuck happened to you? Last thing I remember, I told Ford to put you in cryo. Clearly that didn't happen. So what's happened to the trilobite that doesn't look like a trilobite? I don't know what it's called, the trilobite. But anyway, so yeah, he must be really surprised. And yet, his first course of action is to take off his lab coat and drape it over her shoulders. So...
But why does he even need a lab coat?
Yes, well, we've had this debate many a times with other guests, like, why does he need to change clothes? But yeah, it's that sort of pursuit of the lifelike and the realistic. So I'll discuss this when we get to Walter and Alien Covenant as well.
Okay.
Walter, more overtly than... David, I think, kind of imitates what everyone else is wearing. So if everyone's wearing jackets, he's wearing a jacket. If everyone's in t-shirts, oh, he's wearing a t-shirt.
Right, okay.
I believe it is hot in this room now. Okay, I can't feel it, but I'm going to take it.
Yeah.
You know, I take it for granted, but I guess I'm really watching these movies from a very different perspective because it's all about the clothes.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's what makes it fun.
Yeah, and that's why you have guests on, because you pointed out things that I don't think I would have come to on my own.
Yeah.
So, Wayland doesn't say anything this whole time. So he's not bothered that either his doctor or his android are tending to her, but he doesn't tell them to do so either. It's actually quite interesting that David, I would say in these next few minutes, he is actually being more obedient than usual. He's less sassy and snarky. But right now, he stops tending to Waylon and he goes over to this woman that he has not been told to do anything with. So I guess this is where a lot of Shaw David shippers just fixate on this moment. Like, see, he loves her.
Oh, do they?
Yeah. And...
Android? Yeah.
I think you can definitely see a relationship forming here. Like, I think... At least in this moment, perhaps there's a kind of admiration, at least. But, yeah, I just find the whole thing very interesting. That all these people who are either working for Wayland or are kind of slaves of Wayland. I was like, anyway, we'll get back to you, old man. But this naked bloody woman is here. Gotta do something about that.
This naked bloody woman.
I love words that have multiple meanings.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Wayland is just looking at her. Doesn't really seem to care one way or the other.
Did we ever talk about, is this the first time you see old Wayland, or...?
So you see him at the beginning as a hologram, that sort of introductory speech. This is the first time, and I was about to say this, like, right now, it's his reveal, like, surprise, bitch, I'm alive!
Right, yeah.
Yeah, the doctor guy. So he touches her, but then he pulls his gloves off, and then he obviously replaces them, and then gets back to Wayland. But I'm just thinking, even if you're paid by this guy, you're a doctor, so your first instinct would be to make sure this person's okay, right? But I guess, I mean, I'm trying to figure out the logic. Like, what was Sir Ridley Scott, director Ridley Scott, what was his direction here?
I don't know, man.
We want you to touch her, like, pick her up. But then just walk away.
I don't know.
Okay? There's no logic in this scene. And I never noticed until now, until I had to break it down and really focus and just go, hang on. What were these actors given as direction? What was the purpose of this? Because I think if I was directing this scene, I'd probably say, okay, the security officer, he's right on it. You know, there's an intrusion. This woman's covered in blood. She could be contaminated with who knows what. So he picks her up and he's quite violent with her. And then someone else, maybe, actually, I think the most logical choice is the doctor, who goes, oh, hang on. This woman's injured. Let me tend to her. And then maybe have David come in after that and go, no, I'll take it from here. Instead, it's just like, okay, let's pick her up. And then David puts a jacket on her. And then she sits there. Okay.
Well, I honestly have nothing. I have nothing.
Yeah. I have only questions to present to you, dear listener. I have no answers. We've done it. We've done these, if you want to put it all together, six episodes.
Can't believe it.
Very thankful for your help, Philip, and your insight.
Wow. You're welcome. Woo! Man, Prometheus Minutes, just, it keeps on going. It keeps going.
Doesn't fucking end. If I didn't mention it in the last episode, I will mention it again, that yes, I do now have a Patreon, which is at patreon.com/TravianDesigns, TRAVIAN, you know how to spell it by now. And I've got Alien Covenant and, Covenant Minute and Legacy Minute, Tron Legacy, going at the same time right now. So yeah, I
wait, what?
Yeah, I've done the first episodes of those two.
Oh.
And then I'm doing Prometheus, so far, so good. Where can we find you, Philip?
I do a podcast, I mean, among the many other things, but this one is probably the most relevant. Do a podcast, it's called Twofold Podcast, and we're actually releasing the episode we already released the newest episode that I'm supposed to be editing, but I'm not because I'm on this show. Hey!
Yes.
I take my priority. This is priority over editing, for sure.
Yeah.
And
gotta finish what you started. Kylo
exactly.
Ren.
Finish what you started. And
can't believe that's his real voice.
I can't believe it either. It's called twofoldpodcast.com. I think that's what it is. Twofoldpodcast.com. It's exactly how you expect it to be typed in. And it's where me and my brother and our cousin Tim, we talk about movies and we try to make a new episode every week. And we argue because we definitely don't have the same opinions. And, you know, it's just always, it's a nice, fun time to be had. And hopefully...
You should have called it My brother, my cousin, and me.
That would have been funny. That would have been great. Hey, and we just, it's just a nice little podcast we're doing, so it would be great if you went to check that out.
That about covers it. This is Colson, signing off. You can find me on traviandesigns.com, TRAVIAN, and that Patreon that I already told you about, and Prometheus by Minute on Facebook, and... Honestly, it would be nice to have some more discussions there. So if y'all could just send me some... even if it's just bullshit, you know, I'm just... it's so lonely, you know? Just spam it. I don't care.
Aww. Well, this is Philip. Semi-last survivor of the Prometheus Minute. Signing off.